Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Now That's What I Call a Podcast, celebrating in this edition Now 101 and Now That's What I Call Christmas. And Hannah Verdier and Lee Thompson are our special guest journos. Hannah, Now 101, it's amazing the amount of successful females there are now in pop music. And I say this because back in the day at the Brit Awards, they used to struggle to find people to nominate for Best British Female or Best International Female. It's completely all changed.
It's changed. I don't think Annie Lennox would get a look in this year for Best British Female. Yeah, I really like the way Now 101 begins with this big posse of strong female singers. You've got Little Mix, you've got Ariana Grande and Dua Lipa. And I feel like they really are in control of their own careers as well. I think it's the perfect post-Me Too compilation as well, because these women are own Nick Cardi B, Anne Marie. They're all there and they're all strong and they're all making some of the best music around. I don't think male-orientated guitar bands have had such a look in this year, because you've got all this stream of great pop songs from women.
So what is it that's changed from the days when we used to accuse the music business of dressing women very scantily to sexploit their charms to get them a hit? What's changed? Is it the women taking control? Do you think they're all in control?
I do, actually. I'm raising young females and I don't mind if Anne-Marie doesn't wear very many clothes or Dua Lipa's in her bikini, because I feel like it's her decision. She's not being told to wear that. And I think they genuinely are in control. I think Kylie's gold hot pants probably started it off, if I can go back to the vintage era.
You know what I think really started it, Hannah? I think, and it's very interesting, you hear an interview with Grace from Clean Bandit. She's obsessed with the Spice Girls when she was a kid.
Yes.
And I actually think that a lot of these people that are, you know, you're talking about, that are big pop stars now in their early to mid-20s, late-20s,
yes.
Spice Girls had a genuinely profound effect on them, you know?
Exactly. Adele was talking about it this week, about her excitement about the Spice Girls reunion. But when you saw them, you actually felt massive cliche. You felt the girl power and you felt empowered by them. And I think that generation is coming through now. And they know that if they want to wear a tiny dress, they can. But no one's going to make them. It's their own decision and they're dressing for themselves.
Fair enough. So, Lee, you think 101 is going to be the second biggest compilation album of the year?
I think it could be the biggest.
Bigger than Now 100?
I would think so. Yeah. Because it's Christmas, isn't it? And kind of it's the gifting period. And yeah, people will just go, right, I'm having a party, I need some music. And people, as I say, still want that kind of physical contact. They still want, you know, they're collectors like myself that kind of like to have every single copy of it. So yes, I mean, it will, I think, will outsell 100, even though that was a huge seller during the summer.
I think it could be this year's Christmas gift for the house. Last year we got an Alexa. This year we'll get her now.
I like what you're saying. Okay, talking of Christmas, we'll hear from some of the stars that star on Now Christmas, which just seems to come back every year. But our special guest on this pod is Greg James, recently started to much acclaim on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. Let's hear his Now story. So, Greg, you were born just as Now 6 was being released. And the first Now Christmas album came out that year too, back in 1985. So your first Now that you actually remember would be what, mid-90s?
Yeah, it was mid-90s. And I'm having a look at the book. And the one that, from about 34... And that 35 onwards, and I remember 39 was one of my absolute favourite ones, because it had Brimful of Asher on it, Corner Shop, and that was, I remember thinking, oh, I like pop music. I think I like this. I sort of got it a bit more. So what was that? 98. So that was sort of, that was my second year at secondary school. So that was definitely on a lot in the car on the way to school.
So if that's your sort of moment of realizing that the Now thing was out there, you were secondary school, you had no idea you might do anything to do with music or radio?
Yeah, well, definitely radio. I mean, I was completely hooked on, because the only way you'd hear these songs obviously was through the radio, really. So yeah. I was never a big fan of watching music videos on TV. Weirdly, never got it. This is kind of boring, isn't it? I quite liked radio as well. So, definitely these were... I used to collect these because it was the biggest hits that I would hear on the radio, and I would then use these CDs to DJ at home, and then I would sort of get into radio and use these as my playlist, essentially.
Fantastic.
So I'd have all the hits. So I'd be like, well, here's all the hits that I can essentially do a countdown.
Good place to start. So do you still personally own any Now albums, or have they gone?
I've got them all.
Really?
I've got all the ones that I've ever owned. And I went to, during when I was at university, I went to a charity shop, and I would just have a look through the CDs, and there would always be a few Now CDs, and I would just collect them because I used to do lots of 90s DJ sets at university and stuff to pay my way through university. So I would use them as my record sort of box. And I can't bring myself to throw them away. Because it's such a nice thing to keep. But I've got them all, and they're all in order in an old CD sleeve box.
Yeah.
So I've got them, yeah.
Fantastic.
Also, it's an amazing snapshot into pop culture at that time in that year.
Yeah.
And it takes you back to a time when, you know, people know about the big hits now, even if they don't like the big hits necessarily, they don't necessarily go to them. They really do sort of sum up a time, don't they?
Yeah.
If I just opened up one of these pages and you sort of, where am I now? 2005, which is now 61, and you look at all those songs on there. So actually that was when I was at university. So there were big tracks like James Blunt, You're Beautiful. And then there was like Kaiser Chiefs are on here, Caesars, Jerk It Out, which is a huge hit of the year. The Killers are on there, Hard Fight, all of those sorts of bands and everything. And you've got bands like The Magic Numbers, and that just takes you back to a moment where you go, oh yeah, do you remember when Crazy Frog was a hit? And that was the year.
I'd rather not.
Because it was on CD2, yeah. 19. Number 19 on CD2.
Probably, that's when you... So there's a bit of editorial going on there somewhere by that person compiling. So Now preceded you. It's Now 101 this week.
Yeah.
Do you think it can keep going forever?
Yeah, because as I say, I think that people love... We're a very nostalgic nation. And we like things to... We use things to remember moments in our lives, and Now CDs are, I know it sounds quite grand, but Now CDs are one of those things that does take you back to a time. And also, people like a curated playlist. People like to be told what the 40 songs they need to hear are. That's why people still listen to chart shows. That's why people still like playlists, and they still like curated content, because people like to be told what to listen to sometimes, because there's a lot of stuff.
I like to be guided, at least. Yeah.
It's very noisy, everything, isn't it? Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. So actually, when you've got a list, a definitive list of, you know, 40-odd tracks, you go, all right, well, I'll just stick this on, and there it is. I think Now 101 will be one that I'll treasure, because it will be all those songs that a soundtrack to really... I just feel so happy.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's nothing else, no better way of saying that. I just feel very content and very happy, and I love doing that show so much. It's the most fun thing.
Now, there's a guy who got married this year, started a Radio 1 breakfast show this year, so he won't forget it, will he?
No, 101 will be that, as he says, the time capsule that will remember his happy, happy times in life when he looks back on that 10, 15, 20 years' time.
Picking up on a couple of things that Greg said there, he had that same experience of the CDs in the car being played by a parent.
Mm.
Oh, yes, nothing like it.
It's odd, isn't it? Is that a common theme?
It does seem to be. It seems to be sort of cross-generational, and it's sort of transcended 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know, it still seems to be happening. It is amazing. And, you know, as we said earlier, that whole thing about the safe haven, if you like, you know, of parents knowing that this is a safe place. As Greg says, they've curated all of the best songs of this particular point in time, giving you the family-friendly radio versions on the CD. You can play it in the car, you can play it at your house party, wherever. It works in so many different contexts, really, you know.
people don't get rid of these albums, and not everybody keeps them in a little safe place like Lee probably does, Hannah. are you still strewn around the car, or do you have them on a shelf somewhere?
Do you know what? There's a shelf, a kitchen cupboard, where I keep all of my CDs, and I tried to clear it out, and do you know what happened? I just ended up playing them for the day, and nothing happened. And also, when I move house, I transport all my music magazines, Smash Hits, Q and Select from the 90s, and 80s, I transport them all from one house to another and just never open them. They're just all there.
Yeah.
And my CDs are there. My CD player's locked away, but they're there if I want to look at them and touch them.
Yeah. Finally, before we talk about now Christmas, let's talk about this sort of enduring nature of it. Lots of brands have come and gone. MTV was massive in the 1980s, so we were led to believe.
Yes.
And the numbers of people who actually watched it in this country, in America, huge, but we didn't have so much cable then, so I guess it was massive by reputation and less by actual numbers. Can Now really survive the digital age?
Do you know what the difference is with Now, with those other brands? Now has never changed. You know what you're getting. You're getting the quality, curated songs, whereas Smash Hits went a bit rubbish at the end. It went a bit teen. It went a bit less funny. MTV, I worked there for a while in the early 2000s, and it was all show-based rather than just showing the videos and showing the hits. But with Now, you're not suddenly going to find there's lots of songs you haven't heard on it. And the whole eclectic... Greg was saying about Now 39. I mean, I'm just looking at the track listing. This is Hardcore by Pulp, ends side one. And side two is Vanilla's No Way, No Way. I mean, tell me where you would get that anywhere else. It's just not on.
That's pretty eclectic, isn't it?
Do you have a view on that eclectic nature of it? I mean, there are some records we do not want to hear again, but are we okay with them just because they're on this compilation?
Yeah, I think that does happen sometimes. Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, there it is on a Now album. I'd forgotten how bad that song actually was. Greg mentioned Crazy Frog, for example. Yeah, I mean, let's...
Oh, that brings back memories, though.
Well, that's the thing, doesn't it? They bring back memories. They're so key to kind of a particular place and time that you associate with good times or bad times. And yeah, that's why they work on so many different levels.
So the X Factor won't last as long as Now, for example?
I don't think so. No. It's got a few years left in its contract. But see, that keeps changing as well. You've got to keep the formula the same.
Do you think there's a temptation, though, in this digital age for people to re-up the brand and do different things with it? Now have obviously resisted that, haven't they?
Yes. I've worked for so many places where they have to do something, relaunch. But if you can just stick with it through the slightly lower times as well as the higher times, if you've got a good brand, just leave it as it is.
OK, let's talk about Now, That's What I Call Christmas, which comes back every year. We don't do a new
yes.
voiceover for it every year.
Do
I
you
can
not,
exclusively
you
reveal.
Oh, what?
Sometimes the old one is just as good. Let's hear from some of the stars on the record. Roy Wood and Wizard were on the first ever Now Christmas album. His Christmas classic is on the current version of Now, That's What I Call Christmas. But the song was recorded at the height of summer.
Well, we recorded it in the August.
Yeah, so 73, I think, wasn't it? It was Christmas.
Yeah, I started just before that. And to actually try and get an atmosphere in the studio, I got the roadies in there early and they put a couple of massive fans up in the studio. And obviously, there's no, for the listeners, there's no windows in recording studios. You can't see if it's night or day, really. So, yeah. And they put some blue lights up to give the effects of it being cold. We left those on for a couple of hours. And then got the band to go in and do the backing track, and we were all wearing overcoats and bobble hats and scarves and all that. And we went to take a break around about tea time, and we went outside, and it was like going out of the cinema in the middle of the summer, you know. It's dead. It's so weird. And then when I came to do the mix and everything, the control room, I put like loads of trimmings and lights up in the tree and everything, and balloons. It was absolutely great.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So he obviously really did need to get in the Christmas spirit, which maybe you would have to in August.
I love it. I didn't know that story.
Yeah, there's a great story as well with Noddy Holder from Slade. They recorded it in New York in August and it was 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Literally, you think of as one of the great Christmas records. Yeah. I think Roy did the same year that came out.
What do you think it is, Hannah, that makes these Christmas songs so enduring? I mean, some of them are very cheesy.
Oh, but it's the memories. Like, I can't wait for Christmas to start. I started on my Christmas playlist yesterday. I do a new one every year to keep up to date. But Wizard, that came out, I think, my first Christmas that I was born. And that's been with me all my life. But I love it. And I love it. The first few bars of Mariah, it just brings back those memories. And I get all sentimental about it. I mean, even the Darkness Christmas song.
Oh, I do that, like that song. Yeah.
That is one of my favourites. It reminds me of a really specific time when it was snowing. And yeah, it's the whole memory of it.
The funny thing about those kind of sort of memories and stuff is now you have, if anybody kind of under 35 doesn't know a time that Band-Aid wasn't around, you know, we know the kind of story behind it and why it was made in the first place. But a lot of people now put that just part of their sort of Christmas collection and think of it in the same way as Bing Crosby or whatever. It's just a classic Christmas song, really.
Well, it was another track that appeared on the first ever Now Christmas album, and it's obviously a big favourite to this day. So Bob Geldof, Midgeur, the songwriters involved in the project, hastily put together in 1984 to help Ethiopian famine relief. Let's hear from Midgeur.
The first decision that Bob and I made when we talked about making a record was that it had to be a Christmas record, simply because it was a financial thing. You know, if you have a Christmas number one, a record in the charts at that time, a number one record, the charts freeze over the Christmas and New Year period. So instead of the record just getting to number one for a week and then dropping, it gets to number one. And if you're lucky enough to get there in time for Christmas, it stays there. So you can sell 3-4 times as many records with a number one record then that you could any other time of the year. So it was a very blatant, specific thing we had to do. And of course, when we realised that, you know, you couldn't just do a cover version of a Christmas classic, because 50% of the monies earned from a record go to the writers. So Bob and I had to write something. You know, I went off and wrote my little kind of jingly bells, but da 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 da, that thing. And then Bob came in with these really hideous, dark lyrics. And I had to try and turn this into a kind of jingly, happy sing-along song. But opening the track with the clanging chimes of doom, which is a really tall order, but it was very much a strong, positive decision. It had to be a Christmas record, mainly for the Christmas number one.
I think that's really insightful, because we know a lot about that record, but we didn't know the specific focus they had to make sure it could make as much money as possible for the charity.
I had no idea. I know it was hastily put together, but it actually didn't occur to me that it had to be an original song.
Me neither. I hadn't thought that. Yeah, of course, if somebody else has written it, then you're going to take away 50% of the songwriting royalty. So, brilliant.
And it had this dual purpose of raising literally bucket loads of cash, but it also kept the massive tragedy of the famine in Ethiopia in the public consciousness, not just for weeks around Christmas, but for years and years. Mm.
Yes, but I felt as well, if you watch the video from the time, I felt like the people were there because they really wanted to be. And you could see, like, Paul Weller looked really bored. Marilyn's in the thick of it. It's it's just a snapshot of all the big stars of that time. And their personalities really come through as
and
well.
Have you noticed none of them have been styled?
No, none of them.
They literally just turned up in cabs and kind of, you know, George Michael's hair's all over the place. And boy, George, I think, just came in on Concord or something and did it in half an hour. And it's, you know, with a cup of tea in his hand. It's brilliant. It's such a loose kind of sort of recording, but it's so iconic now. Yeah.
Is it the quality of the song and the kind of urgency of the occasion that made it so effective? What is it?
I think it's two things. Yeah, I think it's the combination of the artists that are on it. You know, you've got George Michael on there, you've got Boy George, you've got Phil Collins. These were 80s
the
pop.
The Big Bono line.
Yeah, 80s pop royalty who still people know and respect to this day, really. Whereas when you're talking about version two that Stock, Aitken and Waterman did in 89, it's a little bit more low rent, really, isn't it?
Well, yes.
Yeah, we don't hear that very often, and I wonder why. Now, there must be many more artists who try to get into this Christmas hits club, even just to get on the Now Christmas compilation, than actually make it. Do you think lots of artists have a bash and then don't dare to put it out?
I think particularly in America, they're forced to, aren't they? The boy bands, I remember NSYNC had to do the Christmas album.
Obligatory.
The Destiny's Child Christmas album is full of bangers, apart from the ballads.
Yeah. Holiday album.
Yes, obviously, yes, sorry, holiday album. Bieber's holiday album.
Yeah.
All good.
Didn't Bieber do a version of Mariah Carey's All Out for Christmas with Mariah Carey?
That doesn't need tinkering with. You should never touch that song. No.
There's a recurring theme recorded and written in the summer. You can't really do it in November, can you? Unless it's like Band-Aid or something, you know, fast turnaround. Maybe all the greatest Christmas songs
were written at the height of a heatwave or something.
Yeah.
Well, the thing you forget, of course, is that half the world, it is a heatwave at Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
You go to Australia and actually Christmas is 30-odd degrees and they're on the beach at Bondi. So it's the whole thing about Christmas songs in this country, and particularly in America that you mentioned, Hannah, it's that whole kind of, you do think, ooh, cold, chills. Mm. And, you know, you take a classic like White Christmas, Bing Crosby, Irving Berlin that wrote it, he was reminiscing about his time back when he was growing up, you know, with his Jewish family. So he was thinking about those times, and now he's in Hollywood and it's 35 degrees or whatever it is. I wish it could be White Christmas like it was the ones I used to know when I was a kid. I mean, that's what the song's all about.
We better hang on to that thought of a White Christmas, because as the planet warms up, we might not see quite so many of them. There's a gloomy thought for us all.
E17 won't need those puffer jackets anymore with global warming.
That infamous video.
Also, I love those songs that aren't Christmas songs but become Christmas songs, like Stay Another Day and the Spice Girls' Two Become One.
Yeah.
I think they're the greatest Christmas hits of all.
And you know another example of that, which actually appeared on the very first Now Christmas album and everyone now thinks of as a Christmas song.
Are you going to say Freiheit?
No, I'm going to say Stop the Cavalry.
Yes.
Because
I just think it's a Christmas song,
but I know that when they were compiling that first original Now Christmas album, people at Now, when the track listing came through, they went, what's that doing on there? And they actually had to fight to get Stop the Cavalry on as a Christmas track on this album. But now, of course, you think of it, well, wish I was at home for Christmas. You instantly think of that song and it conjures up Christmas memories. It's fascinating when you actually look at the track listing from that first Now Christmas album, which came out, as you mentioned before, Mark, in 85, just how many of them still we play now. Band-Aid, Do They Know It's Christmas, is track one. Roy Wood and Wizard is track two. Slade is track three. Wham, Last Christmas. Elton John, Step Into Christmas. Paul McCartney, Wonderful Christmas Time. Greg Legg, I Believe in Father Christmas. Jerry Lewis, Stop the Cavalry. White Christmas, Bing Crosby. They were all on that first Now Christmas album, 33 years ago? And they're still on the one that's out this Christmas. It's incredible.
Let's grab another famous voice here. 80s legend Howard Jones, who of course knows a thing or two about songwriting, on what his favourite Christmas song is and what makes it so good.
It's Happy Christmas, War Is Over, John Lennon and Yoko, you know, because you know, of the chorus, Happy Christmas, War Is Over. And also it's reminding us, like, you know, so what have we done this year and what are we going to do next year? You know, it's like it's throwing out a challenge as well to do something great for the future and remember the good things that we've done in the past. It's something embedded in the song that's got a message that connects with people through the generations. And I think if you can do that, if you can write songs that do that, that's really leaving a great legacy, you know. I'm always trying to do that. I'm always trying to write a song that is going to be not relevant to its own time, but, in you know, when people pick it up 20, 30 years later, it's still going to be relevant.
Howard Jones, and before we wrap up, a little more from Greg James. What is it about Christmas songs that, you know, even though some of them are so cheesy, so how do they pass the cheese test?
We were having this exact same discussion the other night, and I put it down to, and actually came up with a bit of an answer. Well, it's two parts. First of all, as I said, we love nostalgia as a nation. We love that feeling of, we like to go back and relive things. So we don't mind hearing the same songs over and over again. If, this is a strange concept, but if Christmas happened more often, we would remember how awful some of those songs really are.
Yeah.
So if we did Christmas every couple of weeks, we'd go, well, we would evolve it quicker.
Yeah.
But because we do it every year, and Christmas is every year, and we hear those songs once every year, we kind of forget. It's a bit like a car crash, a trauma.
Yeah.
You don't remember the car crash, the details, but you remember you had one.
You remember the good bits.
You kind of, I had a car crash. But you don't remember exactly what happened. So you kind of forget. The human brain, I think, forgets. And you go, oh, it's nice, isn't it? It's cozy Christmas. They put the rubbish songs on. It's kind of fun. I think that's what it is.
And on that note, what is the rubbish Christmas song that you really, secretly quite like?
I love Christmas songs. I think I'm one of the... I would never be snobby about a Christmas song. I love Paul McCartney.
Wonderful Christmas Time.
I think I love that song so much. It's just the opening of that song. It's got memories associated with it. It's just got really lovely Christmassy memories associated with it. So that's, I'd say, up there in my top five. I'd also put Jonah Louie up there as well. Yeah.
So we might hear both of those on Radio 1 Breakfast Before Christmas.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's as I said, no snobbery in playing those because they are part of the national. The psyche, yeah. I think.
He's sharing the same thoughts, isn't he, really?
He really is. And it's, you know, something that Hannah and I were both talking about too. The fact that, yes, it Christmas, you know, I can't wait to hear the Pogues and Kirsty MacColl.
I'm ready.
Again.
I'm ready, yeah. A month before.
I can't wait to hear Wham! Last Christmas because now it's taken on an extra kind of poignancy the last couple of years. They are brilliantly constructed pop songs that work. The fact that they work every single year and have worked every single year for 20, 30 years in some cases.
Christmas music is really important for retail. That's why they start playing it in November. There are now radio stations that start in November, particularly in America. They flip format, but there are stations that come on in Britain every November. It seems to be that we have like an insatiable appetite for it.
That's true. I once overdosed on Christmas songs.
Can you overdose on them?
Well, the year that my Saturday job in Miss Selfridge, it started really early and I had to listen to them all day long on a slightly slowed down loop. And that was the year that really got me. But since then, I've made a full recovery and I'm good till 8 p.m. on Christmas Day.
Thank you to Hannah Verdier.
Thank you.
And Lee Thompson.
Pleasure.
And thanks again to Greg James, Midgeur, Roy Wood and Howard Jones for their contributions to this podcast. You've been listening to Now That's What I Call a Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.